See our schedule, check our helpful links, or stream us anywhere, all at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
All right, everyone, here we go. Welcome to the Speak Up Table. My name is Barbara, and today's guests are Jason Welker, Art Beislein, and Justin Dick. These are three of the eight candidates running for just three open Sandpoint City Council positions. The other candidates will be on with us in the weeks ahead, and I'm sure that you all know that all eight names for the eight candidates will be on your ballot as a Sandpoint resident. You get to vote, and you vote for three, and the top three become your council member. There are no precincts or zones or anything. So everybody votes. Top three candidates, they are your council members. So we have them. A lot of information coming your way right after this.
Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty is locally owned and operated, located on the South Hill and Bonner's Ferry in downtown on Main Street to better serve the community. If you're thinking of buying or selling your home in 2021, think local. Call Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty for a free market analysis today. 208-267-8575. Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, located in downtown Bonner's Ferry and on the South Hill. Coldwell Banker, that's the power of blue.
Oh, I love family road trips. Wind in my ears.
Good dog.
Fruits in my mouth. And peace of mind knowing Les Schwab did our tires, brakes, and alignment. Like Les Schwab, my family's safety is my first priority. Well, that and squeaky toys.
Now save up to $130 when you buy all-weather Quatrac tires with financing. Les Schwab tires. Limited time offer. Terms and conditions apply. See leschwab.com/sale for details.
Need a great big win to shake up your fall? Better head to the Kootenai Casino in Bonner's Ferry, where people like you can win big. Midweek rooms in the Kootenai Falls Lodge start at just $99 a night. Or you can book a Riverview room for just $119 a night. Both include breakfast vouchers for our amazing Springs restaurant. And when all that winning becomes too much, chill in our spa with the Express Spa Package. Offered Monday through Friday in October, it features an express pedicure, anti-stress facial, scalp ritual, and a 30-minute massage. It's regularly $144, now just $99. We have the fun, we have the food, we have the spa, and we have the winning. It's going to be an epic October. Book your October winner's getaway by calling 888-YOU-ARE-LUCKY or visit KootenaiRiverInn.com.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer, maybe yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
North Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM.
Welcome back in, everyone. Gentlemen, hello, and welcome to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Barbara.
Okay, we're going to start with, if you can accomplish one top priority item on your agenda, not just the problem, but what you think the solution is, what is that number one top priority for you? We're going to start with Justin.
Well, hello, Barbara. Thank you for having me. I just want to say thank you to Jason and Art as well, to anybody that's running for this and wants to serve their community. Certainly has my respect and my hat off. So I think number one, for first and foremost with me, is the completion of the the Parks and Rec Master Plan, which includes City Beach, Travers, and the Sand Creek development there right off of First and Gunnings Alley. It's been near and dear to my heart. I have probably been to City Beach more than anyone in the course of the last 13 years and spent the most amount of time. I think it is one of the most amazing assets that the city currently has. We'd love to see this thing get finished through. With that said, is there a 1% local option tax that we'd like to see move through? I think it's the fairest way to tax. Years ago, they came to us, specifically liquor license holders, and wanted a tax to be put on per beverage to those of us that had liquor permits. We only have a per capita system up here of liquor licenses. Again, we'd like to see City Beach, Travers. We've already seen what it did to Memorial Field and that Sand Creek area develop in such a way that we can handle the growing community that we've got, as well as offer more affordable leisure activities for our youth, for our community. Schweitzer's been a great community partner of ours, but it is getting more expensive. You have to have some money to own a boat at times and use recreate on the water up here. And I'd like to see those assets being used more than just 3 to 4 months out of the year. We can use those things year-round and really develop some strong community fabric in doing so, getting out of the house, getting off of your phone, and really enjoying the beauty of this community.
All right, Justin, thank you. Same question, Jason, to you. Top priority, problem, solution.
Absolutely. The number one problem I see right now in Sandpoint is that we have a 12-year-old comprehensive plan that was required by state law to be updated 10 years after its adoption in 2009. During the year of 2009, there were workshops going on to engage the public in the update of that plan for the next 20 years. Those workshops ended with the onset of COVID. I want to resume those workshops right away and re-engage the public, because the world we live in today is not only vastly different than it was in 2009 when that plan was adopted, it's vastly different in 2019 when we began the update of that plan. I think that the pressures that we've seen for growth and development in Sandpoint in the last 2 years, in particular since the update of that plan was put on pause, have really shaken and changed the perspectives of people in Sandpoint and should remind the city of the importance of updating that plan. The comprehensive plan is the foundational document for growth and development in a city. We need to re-engage the public immediately in 2021, 2022 to update that plan so that we know what the values and visions are of Sandpoint residents today, and make sure that growth and development over the next 10 years primarily addresses the values, visions, and priorities of people who live here now.
Thank you, Jason Welker. Art Beislein, same question. Top priority for you, problem, solution.
Thank you for having me on. I agree with both of these gentlemen about their top priorities. So maybe all three of us just get elected and they can handle those two things. And Justin would know this better than me if the solution or not. But my perception is that our service industry here, we don't have anybody who's working. And I don't know if that's because they can't afford to come here and work or they don't want to work. I mean, I think you would know better than me, but my thing would be workforce housing. And I'm not talking about affordable housing. I'm talking about workforce housing, meaning that you don't live there unless you work as an employee for somebody in town, meaning your spouse can't live there unless she works or he works for an employee as an employee in town. So to me, it seems to be a big problem. We have more people than we ever have, and we can't keep restaurants open. And without restaurants, and I mean, bars, restaurants, parks all go together, and you got to have a comp plan to handle all that. And so I just don't see – I know they're working on it. I just haven't seen a lot of action on this issue from – I know somebody was on that panel or board or whatever they've done and said they've met one time. I mean, and I know from Tom Chassie on Schweitzer, like, this is an emergency. I mean, we can't really be a functioning economy if we don't have people to work here.
All right. I'm going to keep it with you, Art. You brought up housing. Let me ask you, I've got a couple of questions on that. Do you agree or disagree that one of the answers to better workforce housing in Sandpoint is to build up in the city of Sandpoint, build up to a third floor and a fourth floor? Agree or disagree?
I think it would depend on where you want to do that. I mean, if it's in an area where you don't have a real visual impact for the building, I think more density is better than less density. But also you don't want 6-7 story buildings sticking up. You know, we have a nice kind of flat plain when you look at our town, and it would look pretty kind of weird to have big buildings in the back of it sticking up. As far as I just don't see workforce housing having any application anywhere near our downtown corridor. It's the real estate's just too expensive, and we have the spot bus to get them from wherever we figure out to do this. And I'm not even necessarily saying it would be on Sandpoint property. It might be a partnership with all of the cities and well as the county to find a nice chunk of dirt and build this stuff. And I know from a local businessman who was actually considering his own workforce housing, and I haven't verified any of this, but apparently they wanted to charge him a whole bunch of impact fees to do this. And I get impact fees having, you know, been in the legal profession and dealt with a lot of cities and that kind of thing, but sometimes you got to make a break, and so we can get them in here.
Okay, same question to you. Jason, talking about building up to 3 and 4 stories, maybe blocking mountains, I don't know. What about zoning?
Sure.
I'm within the city of Sandpoint. What's the solution that you can control?
Absolutely. So the city of Sandpoint is 4.7 square miles. About 60 or 70% of our residential neighborhoods are zoned multifamily. The maximum allowable height in a multifamily zoned neighborhood is 45 feet. That allows for a 3-story building, basically. So anybody who says that, you know, city council wants to build high rises in our neighborhoods, it's just not it's not possible by city code. A 3-story building with multifamily housing, there are some of those in the pipeline right now. I think more of those that are designed in a way that makes them compatible with our neighborhoods and not an eyesore could be part of the solution. Downtown, the maximum buildable height in the commercial zone is 65 feet. That's about a 4 or 5-story building at the most. We have anything like that. Do I think workforce housing could ever occur in our downtown corridor? No, I agree with Art. Those are going to be, if we do see residential development downtown above commercial, it's going to be luxury condominiums for out-of-state buyers. Finally, in our single, go ahead.
So you are in favor of going 65 feet?
I did not say that because I'm not in favor of prioritizing development for out-of-state buyers right now. I'm in favor of looking for creative ways to meet what we call the missing middle housing demands in Sandpoint. That means increased density in our multifamily neighborhoods, maybe even allowing for duplex type developments in our single family neighborhoods, where the height restriction is 25 feet, by the way. So 2-story house is the tallest you'll ever see in a single family neighborhood.
I'm glad I clarified that for you because it was sounding like you were going to go for that 65-foot minimum downtown.
I'm saying it's allowed by code.
It's allowed, but you would not vote for it as a council member.
There's no vote needed. It's already allowed by code. Private developers downtown in the commercial corridor can build up to 65 feet.
Okay, I'll let it go. Same question to you, Justin.
Yeah, thank you, Barbara. I agree with both Art and Jason to some extent here, and I'll just give you a little bit of historical reference. I worked on the original comp plan over a decade ago. One of the number one surveyed results from the community was affordable, attainable housing back then. We are now 12 years removed, and we haven't seen that. Codes were written. South Sandpoint was able to be parceled up in ADUs to be able to come in. Multiplexes, 25 feet high, I believe, was the height for multiplexes to come in. My biggest thing is I'm a small business owner, and I feel that the private sector is where we get the affordable, attainable housing coming in right now. I have condos for my folks. Pre-COVID, many of the restaurant and the retailers were already helping out with rent, looking for fifth wheels, trailer spots, condos. We've had several condos over the time. Working with groups of people in renters' pools, figuring out who can live with each other, who's got transportation to be able to take more than one person to work into our area as well, too. I think as a small business owner, I'd be remiss in not mentioning that we probably do a better job in the private sector of figuring out housing, whereas we're looking for the government to be a developer or to be a landlord, which I don't think they do well. I think their job is to operate the city as best they can. New novel business practices will come up by pulling your employees up, making them managers, making them committed to living in Sandpoint and being part of a very strong fabric in this community.
Okay, lot of information here. If I'm going to keep it with you, if you are saying, and I heard you say, private sector money is where the housing is going to come from. It's not a government. They're not going to build government housing, in other words. But you want the LOT to go for parks. Would you not see that perhaps a better use of Sandpoint City money and maybe even an LOT would be to offset impact fees on these private sector businesses that can come in and build workforce housing.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think, but what we're seeing is quite the opposite, though. I think what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of these places that are coming in, they want market price right now because market price is what they can get. If you look back to 2009 through 2012 with the national economic downturn, everything was affordable in this community. Everything from there over on Fry Creek, there was 27 homes on the water for sale, foreclosed, for lease.
Okay.
And to be able to do so, we are going to run into another economic downturn here eventually. We've been riding very high. I don't know if that's going to be in 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years from now. What I think we need to do is prepare ourselves for when that opportunity comes. As I tell my employees all the time, you put your money away now for when that opportunity comes. We need to have shovel-ready projects as soon as we move forward.
All right. I need to move on.
Shovel-ready. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. I want to stay with housing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hearing that somehow the city council can't, you can't make new rules to say, you know, we can build this way, we can have impact fees at this level.
Yes, sure. So just first a response to Justin there. I don't think the solution to our housing crisis today is to wait for a collapse in house prices in the future. We need to be proactive, not reactive. And of course, there may be opportunities down the road to snatch up foreclosed homes, but that's not a solution to our housing crisis. I think that the demand for among developers right now is to build homes that earn them the greatest possible profits, because that's the definition of market price housing. Right. The model that developers are bringing to Sandpoint is the model that's been extremely profitable in places like Post Falls, Coeur d'Alene, Hayden, where there are vast tracts of undeveloped land. They bring this model to Sandpoint. Single family cookie cutter homes, the two car garages on big city lots that take up most of those lots, do not allow for future density increases through accessory dwelling units.
What would you do about it as a city council member?
I would have advocated for a portion of the local option tax to go towards those incentives that you describe. And I'm on the record talking about this, offsetting development impact fees, offsetting infrastructure costs in exchange for the commitment to provide a certain number of homes for local workers, deed restricted, cannot be sold at a profit, cannot be bought by outside investors or speculators who are only here to capitalize on the hot housing market. So City Council can use incentives, and we can provide a rudder to steer developers to build the kind of housing that our workforce needs.
Okay, Art, the same question to you on housing. And I'm wondering, do you see that City Council could pass something that would say to the developer, you know, we can help you with fees, but you have to sell to people that are either in this income level or they are worker bees, as I think Justin had. They need to be workers. Their wife needs to be a worker if she's living there. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, they could, in part of the new comp plan, they could take chunks of land and zone it as workforce housing, slap it with CC&Rs. I mean, you can tie up dirt any way you want. And, you know, my idea would be just because I think it's a bit of an emergency. Again, I don't know if I'm right. I want to research that. And I think you'd need to, like, kind of talk to all the business owners and say, all right, how many are you short? How many people do we got to attract into this town to maybe kind of fill in our market? And that'd give you an idea of what you really need to build. And then find a way to finance it with public funds, and then find a way to have it slowly paid back by the private businesses. So they're, you know, it's not going to bankrupt them to build this project, but these small businesses don't have the ability to just go out and get a giant loan and as easy as sticking something on the ballot. And I'm not saying that we should not have the parks on the ballot. I'm saying we should have them both on the ballot. You know, at some point soon, I think it needs to be addressed. But yeah, the city can set it up any way they want. And if they're selling private land, they can do anything they like in any transaction.
Okay, housing. I want to go to the LOT that Justin, you brought up, and Jason, you agreed with, and I think you did too, but it's to parks. I mean, do you really think, and I guess I'll start with Jason, I don't know if I've started with you, do you really think that an LOT for more parks and more tourist, I think, attractions, even though I think we have lots of places to walk in town. Do you agree that the LOT needs to be directed to parks and recreation and more land for parks?
So first of all, I agreed with, and I'm thankful the Councilwoman Sherman, Shannon Sherman, proposed allocating $200,000 a year towards sidewalks. I think more should have been allocated towards projects other than just parks. I do have to disagree, though, that parks are only for tourists. Parks are primarily for the people who live here. And there's really not currently a plan to build more parks. We're talking about taking parks that Traverse Park is an example. It was built on an old landfill. If you've spent any time in those fields, you know it's literally crumbling underneath. It's not sustainable. That park's going to continue to deteriorate. We need to improve those parks because children in this community play in those parks. It's what makes our community what it is. So we do need to invest in parks. I would have liked to see a greater proportion of the $1.7 million a year allocated towards housing incentives, streets, sidewalks, other things than parks. And important to me is pedestrian connectivity, bicycle paths, bicycle lanes, and safe routes to school for our kids to get from where they live to their schools, and for workers and local businesses who may not have cars to get safely to where they work.
Okay, Art, you said you wanted the LOT and a housing option, maybe impact fees and money going for that. I'm going to make you choose one or the other. If you're city council, they're both up. You got to take one or the other.
Probably housing right now, but I only say put it on the ballot. That doesn't mean you can't look at the city's books and figure out another way to get it done.
Right. I just want to know how you'd vote if that was the option.
Probably, but I'm not sure. I mean, here's one question that maybe you can answer is, does Bonner County pay anything for Sandpoint City Beach? I mean, do they chip in?
No.
Oh, well, that's a problem.
Right. And that's honestly, that's one of the arguments for the local option tax, is that 85 cents to the dollar, according to the most recent analysis, will come from people who don't live within city limits. This is the only way the city of Sandpoint can collect tax revenues from
the county.
People from the county, tourists who come from other states to help pay for the infrastructure that they're putting wear and tear on.
Okay, I'm going to give the last word on housing to Justin. Wrap it up for us, then we're going to take a break.
Yeah, you bet. In my world, we're probably talking, my employees are on a different pay scale than most of the people we're talking about affordable housing. When we're talking about $300,000-$500,000 houses. Okay, tourism is a huge part of our economy. And not only will this local option option tax get our locals out, shorten our shoulder season so we don't have to lay off as many people, be able to, for us to provide, as small business owners, provide a living wage for our employees to want to live here and be in Sandpoint to be able to do so. Tourism is a huge part of our economy. And if you look back again to 2009 and 2012, we had most of our craftsmen, most of our plumbers, most everybody left over to North Dakota. Okay, there was nobody here. You could call the owner of a plumbing operation to come and fix a wax ring on your toilet when we did not have people in here. What we did have coming through the doors was tourism. People still coming here to recreate, to use our parks, to use our lake. Let's have them leave their money in Sandpoint so that we can do the best with it for our community and our economy.
All right, excellent. We've got it going on here for you guys out there listening. Hope you're enjoying it. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Have you visited Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet lately? They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, and they now stock ammo and knives as well. Of course, Grunberg Schloss carries U.S. and world coins and paper money, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5 on Triangle Drive just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Call 208-263-6060. Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet, 263-6060.
Under the Sun in downtown Bonner's Ferry is open Monday through Saturday at 9 a.m. Check out Under the Sun for new fall and winter accessories and home decor arriving daily. And enjoy the Soul Shine Bistro with its wonderful food selection, plus beer and wine and the espresso bar with organic coffee and more. Downstairs, you can explore the new women's consignment clothing boutique, hand-picked. Open at 9 a.m. Monday through Saturday. Under the Sun, where the sun is always shining. At Super One Foods in Sandpoint, they say, save time, shop online. Pick up your items or have them delivered to your home. It's so easy. Just go to superonefoods.net and select your items and the time to pick up your groceries at the store in one of the reserved parking spaces, or have them delivered to you. It's that simple. And Super One is now hiring, with some positions starting at $14 an hour. Apply online at superonefoods.net.
Okay, joining us today on the podcast is Stan and Roy, collectively known as the Raptors from Triple Play. Guys, here's a question. I've heard the Raptor Reef Water Park is always exactly 86 degrees. Why is this?
Well, Madeline, rigorous studies showed us that 86 degrees is the ideal temperature for fun to grow and flourish.
Oh, Stan.
So are you saying the water park would be less fun if it was 85 or 87 degrees?
I think that might possibly be exactly what I'm saying.
Could we make that, not what he's saying?
The Raptors are brought to you by Triple Play, where you can bowl, play laser tag, climb a ropes course, and splash around in Raptor Reef Indoor Water Park. Plus, it's all attached to a cozy hotel. Visit 3play.com.
At 88 degrees, fun really dissipates, and we want to avoid that.
Okay, Stan, what is that based on?
Instinct, Roy. Distinct instinct.
Oh.
A lot of things feel out of control these days. So it's time you pick your battles. Skip playing referee in the morning. Skip laundry this week. Skip game limits today. Skip cooking tonight. New realities require new routines, and it's okay to skip some of the old ones. But don't skip your preteen's well visits and recommended and catch-up vaccinations. A public service announcement from Vaccinate Your Family in collaboration with Merck.
97.1 FM, 1450 KBFI, and 1400 KSPT.
Hey everybody, welcome back in. I'm glad you're with us today. We're keeping you connected so you can make informed choices. Three candidates of the eight for Sandpoint City Council openings, there are only three, are here today. Justin Dick, Jason Welker, and Art Beisleiner here with us today. My question is this. You know, sometimes when we think about voting for a candidate, we limit the way we look at them to what they're thinking about current circumstances or current issues. And, you know, those issues and those circumstances change in a couple of years, maybe. So it's important to know core values. No matter what the issue is, no matter what the circumstance is, what do you bring to the table that's your core value? And, you know, I'm not sure that I've started, Art, with you, so I'm going to start with you on this question, please.
What's a core value I would want to bring to City Council is just trying to make sure that I can do my part to make sure that the city is being run efficiently and effectively and that the city stays within its bounds. I've dealt with a lot of cities in my job, and not Sandpoint. I've never had filed a lawsuit against Sandpoint, but a lot of other ones. And they seem to be – they want to help, but it's almost like an us versus them. And so they will push a developer, for example, to the point where they threaten to sue for the amount of impact fees. Because, you know, they know that it's going to cost a ton of money if they want to have a fight with me. And they're like, well, how much money do I want to spend on a lawyer and not know the outcome? I'll just pay the fee. And that's one thing that I like to keep an eye on with cities. And I think that there's a lot of other things that go on. That, I mean, like, I think you have a good point. I don't know what any of my issues are because I haven't done the job. I know what's interesting to me now is some of our streets. Our traffic flow, I've kind of been into it with the city and the DOT, and they each say, no, it's their idea for some of these silly things like the right turn or straight at the Chevron station on 5th and Cedar. But those are just my ideas, and I think it's important that I'm very good at listening and not getting hung up on what I think is a good idea. I think that's one of my strong suits is I can change my mind. If you present a different point of view, I will listen and change my mind. I don't have any ideology on one side or the other. That's why I run as an independent.
All right. Excellent. Thank you. The same question goes to Justin Dick. What are your core values, Justin?
I think my core value and something that I've brought to the table since 2009 at opening my business is community stewardship. Hey, I am very big on working with the nonprofits. I want to welcome all of our newcomers to the area, and I want to get them involved. I'm very big with my younger 14 to 18-year-old employees that come in that you guys have been raised in paradise, and some of you don't know that just yet. For a family of ours that came here 16 years ago from Denver, we took a large pay cut to get here, and it was not easy our first 3 and 4 years. I wanted to get the heck out of here after that first winter. It was very challenging. But we knew the price, the cost of raising our kids in this beautiful community was going to pay dividends throughout. I think we need to all sit back and remember that we are one of six votes, and we are managing a $40 million full service city, which is very unique up in North Idaho as well, too. So we have to be stewards of this community. We have to think long-term, 10 and 20 years down the road.
All right, very good. Jason Welker, same question to you. Core values.
Justin nailed it on the head. For me, it's community and community engagement. I moved here because this was the community I wanted to raise my daughter in. I've been a homeowner here for 17 years, part-time resident for 13 of those, and full-time resident for the last 4.5 years. But what drew me here was year after year, I would come back, spend 2 months here, and just dream of becoming embedded in this community. Since I came back, I also left a great career as an economics educator and became a community volunteer and ultimately the executive director of a community volunteer organization, leading volunteer outings weekly for about 30 weeks a year. And to get members of our diverse community, when I say diverse, I'm not talking racially, I'm talking in terms of life experiences, income levels, political affiliations, getting everybody together to come together towards a common goal, a common project objective. That's what our comprehensive plan should be in the next year, is re-engaging the community through community engagement, through workshops, through visioning processes to rewrite that comp plan for the future. I think that's the most important priority right now. It's why I moved here. It's why I'm running for city council.
All right, Jason, thank you. I want to pull the word volunteer out. I think that Jason said the word. Justin was talking about it. There are a lot of people who feel like volunteerism is down all across our country, certainly even in our community. I mean, the VFW may close because they have enough people coming in and showing up. So would you speak to our audience about, do you think intentional recruitment for volunteerism rather than government money expansion is important? Is it doable? Is it something on your list?
It's not really anything that's been on my list, but it would make total sense to encourage people to get out and get involved themselves and not have the government providing every single conceivable service. I've never considered the question, but yeah, I mean, I think it's important. As a kid, I volunteered to work with some people with, you know, mental disabilities when I was young. My mother made me. She just said, because this is what you have to do, you know, and you got to give back, which if you knew her, you wouldn't get that as much, but it was kind of odd even to me at the time. But yeah, I think volunteerism is really important. And given what they pay for this job, I think we're all pretty much volunteering.
Justin, real quick, do you think that there is a way that city council can impact the number of volunteers we have? I mean, I don't know, a reduction in some kind of, you know, exchange for taxes for hours of volunteering or something? Is there a way that would
I think that's a great idea. I don't know how to put pen to paper to it right now. I do chair the Bonner General Health Foundation. I've been on a number of nonprofit boards or advisory councils. This is something that we run into all the time in terms of finding new board members, finding new blood, finding new advisory council member. And it is challenging. And I think where we need to go is we need to engage the community. I think the city needs to work with these nonprofit groups. I think we've seen it over the past in terms of POAC and moving their arts and crafts fair from City Beach up into the downtown sector. I know everybody was very worried about how that was going to go. I think monetarily for that organization, it did well. And I think going back to the LTO and that comp plan, we give ourselves a very good opportunity for all of our nonprofits to work and to gain funds and potentially volunteers by going back to these types of parks like City Beach for the Arts and Crafts Fair.
Okay, Jason, one more idea from you or thought on volunteerism?
First, I think it's really important to recognize and thank the volunteer groups in our community for what they've provided our community. Just thinking of parks, we have a parks master plan that is beautiful, but I've heard estimates that it could cost $55 million. I'd like to recognize the disc golfers in Sandpoint, for example, the Sandpoint Disc Golf Association, which has already built a 36-hole disc golf course on city property at the Baldfoot property on Baldy Mountain Road, which is entirely built by volunteer support and support from sponsors. My organization, Pondre Peddlers, has built over 12 miles of trails, 1 mile from city lines at the Syringa Trail Network, and we're building miles of trails on city property in the Little Sand Creek watershed. This is recreation. These are basically public park infrastructure that are costing the people of Sandpoint $0 because of the efforts of volunteers. So there's a huge willingness to support and give back. Even our housing crisis can partially be solved by volunteers. Public-private partnerships, getting groups like Habitat for Humanity, which is present in our community involved, that's a volunteer house-building organization. We can harness the power of volunteers to make our community be a better place. It's already being done, and I think City Council should continue to explore and encourage volunteer groups in our community to continue making this place
livable. We're getting a lot of agreement on volunteerism. There's a guy in our community, James Payne. I've had him on the show a lot. He's written books about this. He's a professor from Texas A&M and Yale University, and he's like, volunteerism is the answer to a lot of our current problems. All right, couple of just real quick questions, and then we're going to go on a break. We're going to go to you, Jason, first. What is your position on a mask mandate or a vaccination mandate? As a city council member, is that something that you're going to involve yourself with and be concerned about?
The answer is no. I would not vote for a mask mandate or a vaccine mandate at the city council level. I believe it should be every private business's decision to establish workplace safety requirements for their workplace. I personally wear masks when I go into businesses that I either see the employees wearing masks at or they ask customers to wear masks at. I think that choice should be left up to individual business owners. And partly I just don't think it would be particularly effective at the city level. And I think that's just a decision that private business owners should make.
Same to you, Justin, Dick.
Not at all on the city level in terms of mandates for either. And I believe it is each human being's responsibility to decide what they want to do medically with their body and should be none of my business.
All right, Art Beislein, what do you think? Anti-mask, anti-vax?
Just going to have to go ditto with these two guys. I agree with the same thing. It's not the city's job. I do wish that people would, in the exercise of their so-called liberty interest by ignoring mask mandates at private businesses, that they would recognize that they're violating the private business's private property rights by entering and not following the rules. But no, I wouldn't have the government, the city, or any government really do anything about that.
All right. Excellent. That's it for this segment. We've got more coming your way, and we'll be right back.
Don't miss out on life's unforgettable moments. You have adventures waiting and challenges to tackle. And now, P1FCU can help you anywhere life takes you. If you need to make a loan payment, a simple transfer, or even apply for a loan, P1FCU's video banking has you covered. It's real banking with real people. Download the app or visit p1fcu.org to get started. P1FCU, a Pacific Northwest original since 1938. Insured by NCUA.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonners Ferry.
Have you thought about a new and improved low-maintenance metal roof? Badger Building Center has the industry's absolute best Fabrol metal roofing with the absolute best prices around. Fabrol metal roofing comes in 20 different color options, has a 40-year warranty, and will give your home, pool building, or shed the protection you're looking for. Visit Badger Building Center at Post Falls, Segal, Bonners Ferry, or Kalispell for all your Fabrol metal roofing needs. Or visit them online for a free quote at badgerbuilding.com. That's badgerbuilding.com.
What's better than the perfect cut of meat for a tasty meal? That's easy. The perfect cut of meat on sale.
Slice into savings this Thursday during Super One Foods 12-hour meat sale. Angus beef sirloin tip roast, $3.98 a pound. Boneless pork loin roast, $1.98 a pound. And Daly's Big Buy Bacon, two packages for $5.
Super One Foods 12-hour meat sale this Thursday only. The savings are sizzling.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer may be yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
Keep up to date on everything we're doing at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back in. We are here today with three candidates for Sandpoint City Council. There are eight candidates that are vying for three. The top three vote-getters, they get in. So you're in control of what's going on here in Sandpoint. Our candidates today are Art Beislein, Jason Welker, and Justin Dick. When we were talking about LOT, it occurred to me that one of our needs here in Sandpoint is a waste water treatment plant that we've been behind the gun for many years on being not up to par with what we need in that area. So I don't know who started the last time, but I guess I'll go to Justin first. What are your thoughts on how can we solve the problem of our wastewater treatment issues in Sandpoint?
You bet. And this one's a little near and dear to my heart just because I live about five houses down from it right now. And obviously, when we got our home, we realized that was there too. So we've incurred a little bit of smell. It's not the worst thing in the world, but we are talking about a facility that's over 60 years old. That potentially gets retrograded every few years. The piece of property on Boyer was purchased under the description that it was going to, that the water treatment center plant was going to be moving over there. As soon as we realized that was not going to happen, we needed to start taking a look at what was going to be done with that piece of property and how we were going to make those people who paid for that property whole again. I still think that I agree with Jason here. I think the disc golf course has done an amazing job. They've been wonderful stewards of that piece of property, and I think there's some great opportunities there for them. But I do think that piece of property at some point is going to need to get sold, and we're going to need to put that money over to the treatment center. We're talking anywhere from $70 to $100 million to upgrade that. And then we have the stormwater as well, too. I'm also the benefactor of the city's water study that's going on right now with a new sewer lateral. This is our second sewer lateral in the last 6 years. We've dealt with this downtown, and just infrastructure in general in this community needs some looking at. But I think that's where we begin with that piece of property on Boyer and working for a sale of that somehow to get that money over.
You know, you just rang a bell. Everybody I've talked to has used the word infrastructure. I mean, it just comes up over and over again. They're concerned about bike paths, parking, sidewalks, wastewater, water, potable water. I mean, it's just like infrastructure is the elephant in the room that people are not talking about. So let's stay with it a little bit. What do you think about the infrastructure issues, in particular, Jason, maybe wastewater treatment, and how can we accomplish some how can you accomplish some solutions on City Council?
Sure. So we've talked about the local option tax. Just to put things into perspective here, the local option tax is predicted to generate around $12 million of total revenue over 7 years. The cost, as Justin pointed out, for replacing the wastewater treatment plant is estimated to be minimum $50 million. Estimates have risen up to $100 million. One way we could harness a small amount of that local option tax to kickstart the effort to rebuild the wastewater treatment plant is for the city of Sandpoint to buy the property on Baldy Mountain Road, not Boyer, Justin, but Baldy Mountain Road, from the wastewater utility. The assessed value 2 years ago was around $1 million. I'm sure it's gone up now, but I personally would love to see that property retained by the city. And that doesn't mean the whole thing is going to be turned into a public disc golf course. There are far better uses for that property. I would like to see a disc golf course remain there, but I'd love to see approximately 20 acres of that. We need to partner with a private developer to provide workforce housing on a portion of that property. Now, that million to $2 million that the city spends on that property would go into the existing wastewater fund, which currently has around $1 million in it. So let's say we're up to $3 million now. Now we have a way to leverage some city funds to get the big grants that are going to be needed for the full replacement of that wastewater treatment plant. We also need to talk about expansion of service. Ultimately, in order to make this cost effective, we're going to have to serve more people. I'm not talking about developing rural areas. I'm talking about bringing our neighboring cities into our wastewater treatment system if that's something they are interested in. There are benefits to joining a regional wastewater treatment system. The economies of scale are enormous. It'll lower the cost per household if we bring more households into that system and allow the city to leverage our ratepayers' income to harness those larger grants that are ultimately it's going to require grants and other funds beyond what we can generate through local taxes or local ratepayer income.
I just want to tell the audience right now, no matter who gets elected, I'll guarantee you this is going to be another, what, 5, 6, 8 to 10 radio programs down. It's like built in, you know, job security for me. We can just do radio shows on this. It's complicated. It's important. Art Beislein, what are your thoughts on wastewater treatment? How do we move through the years ahead and get this infrastructure taken care of over time?
Well, I have no idea. I know that if I'm hearing that the treatment plan is substandard, needs to be fixed, and it's going to cost $50 to $100 million, then that would take some pretty serious looking at the finances of the city, other potential sources of revenue, grant money. I just remember watching when they did it for Dover Bay out there. You know, there was a lot of moving pieces that they used to figure out how to pay for that thing. So at this point, I don't know what I would do. I would say, well, if it has to be done and we got to do it, then let's sit down and figure out how to do it. But I can't really answer that because I don't know anything about the city's finances or anything else.
Okay.
So.
All right. So I think it's interesting the concept to take the LOT money and begin to gear that toward maybe not all parks, but gear it toward hiring people to do the grant applications or to begin to really find out how we can move forward in this. Really good ideas, you guys. I appreciate it. All right. I'm going to give you each an opportunity. We've got time for this. I want you to, this is your last to speak to the audience about why you're running, what you think is important, to ask for their vote, and to say goodbye for today. We've got 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. Justin,
yeah, thank you. Well, thank you. I'll be as brief as I possibly can. I love this community. I have never been more happy in my life to live in this community. It's offered me all sorts of opportunities. I think my volunteerism is my zen away from the craziness of the food and beverage industry. My wife and I used to volunteer quite a bit on some political campaigns in Denver. We were one of 1,000 people that were only recognizable by a name tag on our shirt. And they'd say, Justin, you go at work the phones. As soon as we were able to get in here, we were open arms received by this community. We want to do the same thing as we're building up right now, as we're working on infrastructure, as we're welcoming new people to this community. We also need to take care of our locals, our people that have been here for a long time, our fourth generation. Jason said it once, we need community engagement. I've been very pleased with the way the city has been over from roughly 2016 and on, because what we heard then as a small business owner was no. And every time I hear no, I always think of it's the path of least resistance. I'd like to be solution-oriented, and I want to make a lasting impression on this community for the next 10 to 20 years.
Excellent. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Barbara. Yeah, I've been very fortunate to have served this community for the last 2 years as a commissioner on the Planning and Zoning Commission, and for the last year as the chairman of that commission. I'm very comfortable in city council chambers in that role. I've seen and dealt with lots of the development challenges that we've faced in those 2 years, and I understand that the way I can represent the people best with my experience on planning and zoning, with my experience as an economist, with my knowledge of the comprehensive plan and city code is to take it to the city council. And I think re-engaging the public, that's my mantra. I want to re-engage the public in the process of planning for the next 20 years. I have myself a daughter, a 9-year-old daughter who goes to Washington Elementary. I want to raise her here and her to be able to afford here when she finishes college in 15 or 20 years and wishes to call Sandpoint home. The path we're on right now is not sustainable because I don't believe my daughter's generation will be able to call this place home in 20 years.
Jason Welker, thank you. Art Beislein.
I agree with these two guys. I love this town. I wouldn't live anywhere other place on the whole planet. And I also agree that you know, I was born here, and I think that matters not at all. I think the minute you throw in your lot with this crew, then you're a local. The minute you get out of your car. And I think that's what probably my strong suit is that I've litigated for so many years, and 95% of every lawsuit settle, which means you learn how to find middle ground and compromise. And if we need anything, it is desperately that.
All right. Thank you to each and everyone. You, Justin Dick, Jason Welker, Art Beislein. Thanks, everybody, for being with us today. Next week, more city council candidates will be right here talking to you and vying for your votes. So until then, this is Barbara saying take care and God bless you.
K246 CU, 1450 KB.